Hello, this is Debbie. Back again. I can't believe how fast the week has gone. I hope yours has gone as well as mine. It is Wednesday, July 20th, 2016. I am here again to read the Decatur Herald and Review E edition. So, starting with the first page, of course, politics. Trump triumphs as GOP nominee. This is by Julie Pace, AP White House correspondent, out of Cleveland. United for a Night, Republicans nominated Donald Trump Tuesday as their presidential standard bearer, capping the billionaire businessman's stunning takeover of the GOP and propelling him into a November face-off with Democrat Hillary Clinton. This is a movement, but we have to go all the way, Trump said, and videotaped remarks beamed into the convention hall. For Trump, the celebration was a much-needed opportunity to regroup after a chaotic convention kickoff that included a plagiarism charge involving wife Melania Trump's address on opening night. There were no big missteps Tuesday, but the event was void of the glitzy Hollywood touch Trump promised, with a series of Republican officials parading on stage to level sharp but repetitive criticisms of Clinton. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was one of the few speakers to energize the crowd, delivering a full-throated takedown of Clinton and imploring delegates to shout guilty as he ticked through numerous accusations of wrongdoing. We didn't disqualify Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States. The facts of her life and career disqualifies her, Christie said. Trump's family again took center stage, underscoring the campaign's urgent task to reshape the image of a candidate seen by large swaths of voters as harsh and divisive. Two of Trump's children testified to his character, casting him as a man undeterred by challenges. For my father, impossible is just the starting point, said Donald Trump Jr., the oldest of the Republican nominees' five children. For some Republicans, the night also offered a glimpse of what could have been. House Speaker Paul Ryan, who resisted calls to jump into the presidential race, made a vigorous call for party unity, though his message focused more on the risks of letting Democrats keep the White House and make gains in Congress than a rationale for Trump. Let's compete in every part of America and turn out at the polls like every last vote matters, because it will, Ryan said. Many Republican leaders stayed away from the convention, still wary of being associated with the divisive candidate and unsure how his nomination impacts their own political futures. The crowd gathered in the cavernous convention hall reflected the growing dissatisfaction among some Republicans with party elites. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has been a lukewarm supporter of Trump, was greeted with a smattering of boos as he took the stage. It was one of the occasional flurries of dissent on the convention floor, including jeers as states that Trump did not win recorded their votes during the nominating roll call vote. Still, Trump far outdistanced his primary rivals, and his vice president pick, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, was also formally nominated. Trump was put over the top by his home state of New York. Four of his children joined the state's delegation on the convention floor for the historic moment and appeared overwhelmed with emotion. Tiffany Trump, the candidate's 22-year-old daughter with ex-wife Marla Maples, sprinkled her remarks with rarely heard anecdotes about her father, including the handwritten notes he left on her childhood report cards. My dad is a natural-born encourager, the last person to ever tell you to lower your sights, she said. Melania Trump was praised for making progress and highlighting her husband's personal qualities during her Monday night address. She spoke of his simple goodness and his loyalty and love of family, while noting the drama that comes with Trump in politics. But her speech was quickly overtaken by charges that included two passages, each 30 words or longer, that matched a 2008 Democratic convention address by Michelle Obama nearly word for word. Trump's campaign offered no apologies, with top adviser Paul Manafort telling the Associated Press the matter had been totally blown out of proportion. Still, the plagiarism controversy and other unforced errors by the campaign cast a shadow over the convention and raised fresh questions about Trump's oversight of his campaign, which gives voters a window on how a candidate might handle the pressures of the presidency. Clinton pounced on the tumult, saying the Republican gathering had so far been surreal, comparing it to the classic fantasy film Wizard of Oz. When you pull back the curtain, it was just Donald Trump with nothing to offer to the American people, Clinton said during a speech in Las Vegas. Trump's campaign did succeed in tamping down late efforts by dissident delegates to derail the convention, including during Tuesday's roll call vote. Campaign officials invested significant time arguing to delegates about the importance of presenting a united front during the televised convention. "United we stand, divided we fall," said Johnny McMahon, a Trump delegate from Arkansas. But Colorado's Kendall Unruh, a leader of the anti-Trump forces, called the convention a sham and warned party leaders that their efforts to silence opposition would keep some Republicans on the sidelines in the fall campaign against Clinton. End of that article. Next one, totally different. Recreation. Pokemon players urged to stay alert. This is by Allison Patty, an H&R staff writer, Decatur. "While the Pokemon Go smartphone game has brought hundreds out to the city's parks and downtown, it has not yet caused any serious problems," local law enforcement agencies said Tuesday. Representatives from the Decatur Police Department, Macon County Sheriff's Office, and Decatur Park District Police all encourage people to remain aware of their surroundings when playing the extremely popular game. There have been reports of unsafe situations caused by the game in other cities. A Florida man shot at two players who were outside his house Saturday. Last week in New York, a man crashed a car while playing the game, and two men in California fell off a cliff while absorbed in their digital adventures. Nothing like that has been reported in Decatur so far. Law enforcement officers hope it will stay that way. "We're glad to see people out, but we just want them using common sense," said Chief Ed Culp of the Decatur Park District Police. The game uses GPS technology, so players move by walking around in real life. Every so often, Pokemon appear and can be caught with different ones showing up based on the time of day and terrain. Certain areas attract more people because various landmarks are designated as Pokestops, where items are available, or gyms where players can train and battle their digital creatures. Central Park is one of the hottest spots in town and has been inhabited by roaming groups of players on most nights in the past week. Despite that, Sergeant Steve Carroll of the Decatur Police Department said there have been no reports of serious crime caused by the game in the downtown area. Carroll said Decatur officers have responded to some calls for service when players stopped their cars in the middle of the road and walked away in search of Pokemon. He cautioned players never to use the game while driving and to generally pay attention to what's happening around them. "Be cognizant of where you're at. Take people with you," he said. "People just need to slow down and play the game, have fun doing it. But please be respectful of others, be aware of your surroundings, and do it in a safe manner." Caitlin Welker, 20, is among those who regularly play downtown and said she always goes with a group and feels safe when doing so. "Less common Pokemon appear at night, which is why so many people choose to play after dark," she said. Like many others, she feels especially fond of the game for nostalgic reasons because she played Pokemon games as a child. It's also taking her to parts of the city she didn't normally visit before. "It actually caused a lot of people who don't know each other in Decatur to know each other," she said, "especially because the game allows players to choose one of three teams. It's creating new friendships with people you normally wouldn't be friends with or even talk to because you didn't know them." Welker said she and her friends try to keep Central Park clean out of consideration for the city in hopes that they can keep playing there. Before they leave at night, they'll often put away their phones and take a lap to pick up trash others might have left behind. She pointed out that the game includes a warning every time it is turned on, reminding people to stay alert. The map also makes it clear when a player is about to cross the street, so there's no reason not to look up when doing so. "It's common sense," she said. "If you're walking around, you're going to cross the street, look up, make sure there's no cars coming, and then cross." Randy Callison, city forestry and property supervisor, said he wasn't aware of any problems with trash or other maintenance issues caused by the players downtown. Culp said park police have had to ask some people to leave the park district's park, which closes at 10. They've also encountered some players parking behind private businesses at night, which has caused some concern. But overall, no criminal activity or injuries have been associated with the game, he said. "A positive is that it's brought more people out to the parks. That's what we're here for. We want that," Culp said. "We just want them to be careful. We want them to look up from their phones and enjoy the day." Sergeant Scott Flannery of the Sheriff's Office said the office has not received any reports of driving accidents caused by the game. He also urged players to stay off private property and be careful while walking. "Just use common sense, like you would with texting and walking," Flannery said. "Obviously, don't do it while you're driving and be aware of your surroundings." End of that article. Next article, education. Richland presidential transition nearly finished. Richland approves president, says the headline on the paper. Valdez begins August 1st, construction restarting. Decatur. This is by Chris Lisvardi, another staff writer for the Herald and Review. The transition to a new president is in the final stage of being completed at Richland Community College. The college's board of trustees approved a contract Tuesday for Chris Valdez, to become its seventh president starting August 1st. The contract is effective through June 30th, 2019. Valdez will be taking the place of Chuck Novak, who's been filling the role on an interim basis since Gail Saunders retired February 29th. Novak had previously worked as Richland's president from 89 to 2001. It's been a great experience, Novak said, returning to Richland. We've had a great staff and we've gotten a lot done. Novak says he plans on staying around in the next month or so to help further help. He plans on returning to DuQuoin, where he's been living during retirement, and serving as special projects consultant and interim finance director for the city. Board Chairman Bruce Campbell was nervous about what Novak would say when Campbell called him about the idea of coming back to Richland. Campbell said he worked out well for Novak to serve in the position. "We're thrilled he came back," Campbell said. Valdez will be coming to Decatur from Central Wyoming College, where he has worked since 2014. He previously served as president of Edison Community College in Ohio. At Richland, Valdez will be making a base salary of $219,500 per year with an automobile allowance of $9,000 per year and a phone allowance of $1,500 per year. Novak said Valdez will be in a better position starting off with a temporary state budget agreement in place. The college hasn't been counting on receiving money from the state during its recent budget planning process. With the approval of the state budget, the college is looking to get construction of its Student Success Center back on track, said Greg Florian, vice president of finance and administration. The money for the project still hasn't been released, he said. It's moving a little bit. It's exciting to something is going forward, Florian said. Bids for the construction are now nearly 2 years old, so Florian anticipates costs will need to be adjusted. He said it will be at least 2 months before work will be likely resuming on the 22,000 square foot space, and another year by the time it would be finished, depending on the construction season. Florian said about $4.1 million was reappropriated for the project, which represents a slight reduction from the total amount initially appropriated for the center. Richland has already used its $1.1 million share of the cost, he said. The goal is to move a number of student services into one location, but the unenclosed shell of the building on the college's front lawn has served as a visual reminder of the fallout from the state budget stalemate. Completion of the Student Success Center could fall behind the Carroll Center for Business project, which Florian said is moving ahead with the testing of different designs. Florian said it is on schedule to begin construction by next summer, which would likely be completed in 6 to 8 months. The $3.3 million in funding for the Carroll Center has been raised through the Richland Foundation. End of that article. Continuing on the front page, local, new law allows drug courts to use medication to battle addiction. Opioid law allows drug treatment. Anti-overdose options limited in drug court, say the headlines. This is by Dan Petrella, the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. Participants in drug court programs across Illinois will be allowed to use medication to combat opioid addiction under a new state law that will take effect January 1st. Governor Bruce Rauner signed a measure late last week that prevents judges from barring drug court participants from using medications such as methadone when prescribed by a doctor to treat opioid addiction. At the same time, Rauner signed another measure, also effective January 1st, requiring substance abuse programs licensed by the Illinois Department of Human Services to provide educational information on medication-based treatment and use of anti-overdose drugs. Kathy Kane Willis, director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University in Chicago, said the new laws are important steps in strengthening efforts to combat the state's growing heroin and opioid addiction crisis. The drug court bill, in particular, will ensure that people struggling with addiction have access to the most effective treatments, Kane Willis said. Drug courts are an alternative to jail or prison for people who have been convicted of nonviolent drug crimes. Participants make regular court appearances and undergo addiction treatment. However, despite research showing the effectiveness of medication-based treatment, some courts have required participants to refrain using medication as a condition of completing the program, according to the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy. People have died as a result of being forced to get off medication-assisted treatment to complete drug court, Kane Willis said. Both laws were designed to fill in gaps in a major anti-opioid law the General Assembly passed last year with overwhelming bipartisan support. State Representative Lou Lang, Democrat Skokie, was the lead sponsor of last year's package and this year's bills, and State Senator Melinda Bush, Democrat Grays Lake, shepherded them through the upper chamber. This is part of our continued shift toward treating drug addiction like what it is, a devastating health concern that becomes the root cause of other personal and societal ills, Bush of the drug court bill is in a prepared statement. I think we're missing a sentence, but you know what we mean here. We want to ensure that there's no gap in doctor-prescribed medication for those trying to overcome addiction. We won't deny someone the treatment they need. Dennis McGuire, deputy director of the drug court program in McLean County, said officials there will need to review and discuss the new law, but he doesn't foresee it requiring any major changes. We're going to rely on our treatment providers to come up with the best course of action on how to treat the individual client, McGuire said. There are currently about 40 people going through the program, which he said is reserved for the high-risk, high-need individuals. End of that article. On to the local. Decatur Public Schools plan week-long registration. This is by Valerie Wells. Again, Decatur. The start of the school year is coming up soon, and the Decatur School District is holding a week-long registration beginning on Monday, July 25th. This is not a new process, said Rochelle Clark, Director of Student Services. We've done registration like this in prior years and have seen more parent involvement with this practice. Former Superintendent Gloria Davis instituted early and centralized registration in the hope that it would make easier for buildings to plan. Before that, parents often waited until the first day of school to fill out registration paperwork, which caused chaos in school offices and on bus routes that first day and delayed the start of actual learning, complicated by the fact that Decatur is a high-poverty, high-mobility district. Registration is yearly and includes parents completing the necessary paperwork for all school-age family members, providing proof of residency, ensuring all medical documentation is on file, and making sure the school has working contact numbers in case of emergency, Clark said. This was not taking place in all of our schools, especially at the secondary level. We need our parents involved in this process. District-wide registration will be 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday and Tuesday, July 25th and 26th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, July 27th and 28th, and 9 a.m. to noon Friday, July 29th. Students must have up-to-date immunization records and a copy of their birth certificate, and parents must complete a registration packet. Immunizations must be completed and records turned in no later than the first day of school, August 17th, which is new this year. In the past, our deadline was in October, and the students would be excluded from school by law if they missed that deadline and could miss anywhere from 1 to a month of school, Clark said. This hinders their learning and eventually yields failing grades. Decatur schools want our kids in school without any interruption to their learning. Having this deadline will hopefully help ensure this. Free physicals will be available on August 13th at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, 530 West Mound Road, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., at First Christian Church at 3350 North MacArthur Road, 9 to 2, and immunizations will be available at Macon County Health Department on Condit, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Bring medical card, health insurance card, or payment. If parents have questions about immunizations or any aspect of registration and deadlines, they can call their child's school. Registration will be held at individual buildings. If you're unsure which building your child will attend, call the Keel Administration Building, 362-3000. The Keel Administration Building, 362-3000. Continuing on with one of the better set of pictures here with hummingbirds, audience flocks to festival. Hummingbirds draw a crowd. Decatur. This is by Justin Kahn of the Herald and Review staff. A hummingbird sat motionless in Abby Manx's hand. Then Vernon Killeen asked, "Are you ready for it to fly?" Minx, 6, nodded. Then Killeen told her to tap her hand from the bottom. When she did, the bird shot out of her hand on a line through the crowd gathered at Rock Springs Nature Center toward trees in the distance. Avi's older sister, Zoe, 10, likes hummingbirds, so their mom, Adele, agreed to take them to Tuesday's Hummingbird Festival. The birds are captured at the hummingbird feeder set up at Rock Springs, given to Killeen, a licensed hummingbird bander since 2000, then handed to the next person in line who has adopted a bird for $5, and the bird is released back into the wild. "I'm fascinated by hummingbirds because they fascinate other people. Just look at this crowd of people," said Killeen, an avian ecologist for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources for 30 years. Avi and Zoe thought the bird would fly as soon as it hit Avi's hand, but it didn't. Killeen said, "Sometimes they do, but other times they become mesmerized." "I thought its wing was broke," Avi said. "Maybe it just liked you," Adele said. "It probably did," Avi said. Hannah Steiner, 13, came to the Hummingbird Festival last year, but didn't get to release a bird because she really arrived late. This year, she and her mom, Amy, arrived early, and Hannah was able to watch one launch from her hand. "When it's sitting in your hand, it's super light. You can barely feel it," Hannah said. "You can feel the heartbeat, but it doesn't even feel like a heartbeat. It feels like just like buzzing. When it flew off, it was just a little brush against my hand." Hannah became interested in hummingbirds by watching the feeders outside of her home in Iliopolis. She gets on our deck, gets up on the railing, and actually gets right next to the hummingbird feeder and takes pictures of them, Amy said. She has video from just a foot or two away from them. They're not remotely scared of her. Killeen does more than 20 hummingbird programs a summer around Illinois. After birds are caught in the feeders, they're taken to Killeen, who measures them, wraps a tiny metal band with a number on it around the bird's leg. He then announces the sex of the bird and whether it's a youth or adult before putting it in the hand of the person who paid to adopt it. "I use special pliers to attach the band so that when I squeeze it, it goes perfectly around the band's leg, because the last thing we want to do is injure or cause any problems for any of these birds." End of that article. Niles, newest member of Mount Zion School Board, by Ryan Boyles again. Mount Zion. After the Mount Zion School District provided her with the education and foundation to succeed in her personal professional life, Christy Niles figured she could give a little bit back in gratitude. Niles, a native of Mount Zion who has 2 sons in the district, was unanimously appointed as the newest member of the school board. As board members came to congratulate her after the meeting, Niles said she looked forward to doing her part to continue the district's success. "I just want to give back to the district that the most I can," she said. "We really have a great district, and it's an honor to be on the board." Niles was appointed to serve the remainder of Kathy Gisler's term, which runs until April. Gisler, who stepped down last meeting due to moving out of the district, was originally appointed to the board in September to serve the 2 years of previous school board member Todd Cole. Niles said that after the meeting, she was unsure she'd run for election next spring and wanted to get acclimated to the board before making a decision. In other business, the board heard discussion on refinements to the district's hiring process. Among the changes in the proposal clarifies the drug testing policy for new hires, specifically if the drug tests come back dilute. If the test comes back positive dilute, then employment is terminated immediately. A negative dilute test would require the applicant or new employee to submit a hair sample for drug testing within 48 hours of receiving prior results. A dilute result generally means someone has ingested an unusual amount of water prior to the test. A dilute positive means there's still enough of a drug in the urine to be detected. It's an issue that language in the current policy did not address, Superintendent Travis Roundcout said. "We felt that it was unnecessary to include," he said. The other major change is that new employees are no longer required to undergo tuberculosis testing, with the exception of pre-K teachers and teaching assistants. The board is expected to vote on the policy changes at its August meeting. End of that article. The crime in courts includes interstate speeding net. Stop Nets cocaine dealing suspect. This is by Huey Freeman from the H&R staff. A traffic stop on Interstate Highway led to the arrest of a Michigan man with an extensive criminal history after Decatur Street Crimes detectives found he was carrying about 3 ounces of crack cocaine with a street value of about $14,000. After About 12:15 Monday, Jonathan Roseman of Macon County Sheriff's Office stopped a blue 2000 Mazda in the eastbound lanes of Interstate 72 near the Argenta exit for exceeding the speed limit. As Roseman spoke with the driver and only occupant, Devon Ballard, 29, Decatur Police Detective Chad Larner arrived on the scene, deploying his canine partner, Nico, to conduct an open-air sniff of the vehicle for narcotics. After Nico indicated there was presence of illegal drugs in the vehicle, a search turned up a shopping bag beneath the rear seat containing two clear, knotted plastic bags filled with crack cocaine, weighing 146 grams, including the packing, said police affidavit. Ballard told police he was from the Detroit area, but contemplating to move to Detroit. He was from the Detroit area, but contemplating moving to Decatur as he had several friends in the area. Ballard denied any knowledge of the cocaine under the rear seat, the affidavit said. He was booked into the Macon County Jail, where he's being held on a $255,000 bond on charges of possession and manufacture delivery of cocaine between 100 and 400 grams. He is due in circuit court for arraignment on Tuesday. Ballard has had 11 criminal cases in Michigan, including 7 felonies for crimes including robbery, assault, delivery, manufacture of a controlled substance, and assault. End of that article. Then to the briefs for Wednesday, July 20th. The Decatur Salvation Army is offering a cooling station with cold drinks and light snacks today through Friday, for anyone who needs to get out of the heat. The area is located in the upper floor of the Larry Cunningham Social Service Center, 137 South Church Street. Mount Zion, an evening campfire will be held at Fort Daniel Conservation Area from 8 to 10 Friday, July 22nd at Fort Daniel Conservation Area at 4975 Fort Daniel Road. There'll be games, roasted marshmallows, and American Indian lore. The cost is $2 per person or 10 per family. Pre-register online by noon tomorrow at the Macon County Conservation website. Tuscola, Natural Hazard Plan. Douglas County will be updating a countywide plan that will identify activities and projects to reduce the damage caused by natural hazards such as floods, snowstorms, thunderstorms, tornadoes, and ice storms. The Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan will be updated every 2 years. I don't know. It doesn't include the number of years. And funded through a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Municipalities intending to participate include Arcola, Arthur, Atwood, Camargo, Garrett, Newman, Tuscola, and Villa Grove. Residents are encouraged to attend. The committee will meet at 1 p.m. tomorrow, Thursday, July 21st, in the Douglas County Ag Center on Washington Street in Tuscola. For more information, call the Douglas County Emergency Management Agency at 253-9538. 253-9538. Decatur, St. Louis Zoo Trip. The Macon County Conservation District is taking a road trip to the St. Louis Zoo on July 24th. The activity leaves from the Rock Springs Nature Center at 10 a.m., and participants will return by 6 p.m. A $20 per person fee covers transportation and parking. Admission to the zoo is free, but some features charge a small fee, and meals are on your own. Register online at themaconcountyconservation.org or call by Friday, 423-7708, 423-7708. And finally, in this local briefs, Monticello, Allerton Park Yoga. Yoga at the Sun Singer is 9 a.m. Saturday, July 23rd, Allerton Park and Retreat Center. Just bring bug spray and a mat. Allerton is at 515 Old Timber Road, Monticello. For more information, call 333-3287, 333-3287, or visit allerton.illinois.edu. End of the locals, and it is the end of part one of the Wednesday, July 20th, 2016, online Decatur Herald and Review, as read by Debbie. Talk to you again soon.